Washington football. Woo! Everybody, and welcome to the Burgundy Zone. I am your host, Kyle. I am also joined by my two co-hosts, Michael Hall and Michael Reed. But we are joined by very special guest, Rico of Street Scores. How are you doing tonight, sir?
I'm good. How are y'all?
Doing fantastic,
fantastic.
Rico. We have a great episode for you guys, all lined up. There's so much news to go over. Brandon Sheriff being tagged, Allen Robinson being tagged in Chicago. Levante David is now off the market. But first, I have to ask you a couple questions, Rico. First off, you being a Washington fan, judging by that jersey that you're wearing, how long have you been a fan of the Washington football team?
Born a fan. I'm from Atlanta, but I was born in Maryland. Regardless, my mom and everybody, grandparents and all of that, they're all Burgundy and Gold fans. So I could have been born in Alaska. I still would have been a Burgundy and Gold fan, but I was, in fact, born in Maryland. But I was born with it. If I can find some baby pictures of myself at some point during here, I'll show y'all. I'm 2 years old, head to toe, Burgundy and Gold.
Hell yeah.
That's right.
There you go.
That's the kind of stuff I like to hear. But I think I already know the answer to your question that I'm going to be asking you. Did you have a favorite player growing up?
Burgundy and Gold-wise, I used to love Steven Davis back when 2K still did NFL games. But I didn't exactly know what was going on. I just knew I loved the Burgundy and Gold. And then this running back was really good.
Hammer toss with him.
The
hammer toss was money every time.
Oh, yeah. Unstoppable. Money play. and then B. Mitch at a certain point. Then Daryl Green for a really long time. Daryl Green is my favorite player for quite a long time.
Right.
And then, of course, Sean Taylor. Now I have a couple of favorites, but nobody's Daryl Green or Sean Taylor to me yet. There's some guys, there's some candidates that can work up there. But then, of course, off of Burgundy and Gold, Cam Newton, just being from my area, same high school, same air. We even named the street after him now because he comes back and gives back all the time. Like, he's really involved. Cam Newton and Daryl Green.
That's great. That's cool as hell that you're from the same town as Cam. Cam seems like he's like one of the best dudes in the world off the field. Like, people don't give him enough credit. Is he really? He is how he seems?
He always comes back. I mean, we're also the ones who produced Adam Pac-Man Jones. So just to give you a good feel of, like, the area.
it's a big gap between. It's one extreme or the other.
But Cam always comes back. He does football camps. And while he was in Carolina, he made sure he did it there and came back to his hometown in Atlanta to do it also. Damn. So he wanted to give to the city that he worked for and played for, but also wanted to make sure his home was straight too.
Hey, let's start off with some fan questions, because we can't go with the latest news that has happened regarding the Washington football team without it. And that is Scott Hartley's question. And I'll go to you first, Rico. Scott Hartley asks, with Sheriff, is he worth the $18 million price tag?
I want him, but $18 million for a guard is wild. I believe the franchise tag money for guards at base is like $12.7 million. But because we keep tagging them, it's increased. Now it's at $18 million. I don't want to pay a guard $18 million. I love Brandon Sheriff, but, 12 games a season just about – it's a little too much for me. I really hope we can get a long-term deal done at some point before. What is the due date? July 15th or somewhere around there?
Something like that.
I really hope.
I thought it was June, so I was way off. I'm going to tell you that. But
It may be. It may be. Don't take my word.
It's July. It's July.
Yeah, it's like July 9th, July 15th, somewhere around there.
Okay.
Yeah, look, for me personally, and Scott's next question was, do you think it's been placed to enable a long-term deal? And that's essentially what I think it is that they couldn't reach a deal up until this point. And so what they said is, all right, instead of you allowing you just to go in free agency and talk, let's place a franchise tag. That way we have more months to be able to come close and have a better deal in place. I think the second most paid guard right now is, I'm not mistaken if it's like Norwell, but it's like $14.7 million. So Sheriff is getting paid $4 million more than any other guard, blowing the market out of the water. Obviously, I don't think he's going to play on that $18 million. I don't think that he's going to do a sign and trade at all whatsoever. I just think this gives them the ability to keep Sheriff and to give them the option to get a long-term deal done, so that way they can kind of ease into this cap space, because they had around 54 million, and now this brings it down to 36.9 million after the $18 million franchise tag. And when you're talking about re-signing Darby and getting these other big free agents that guys want, that money is slowly starting to deteriorate. So what about you, Reed? What do you think about the Brandon Scherff tag?
I think it was necessary. Like Rivera said before the season, he wants to see who his guys are before he commits to anybody. And look, like you said, Scherff's a guard. That's a lot of money that you got to pay a guard. He wasn't all pro, but he also has tackle money. Right. He's getting up there in age. He's got some injury concerns. Like you said, Kyle, I think that it's kind of just a tag so they can kind of work out a deal. And I hope that they do, because I love Scherff. Obviously he's somebody that you want on your team, but you're right. I don't know, that 18 mil right there, that's a lot of money. And I don't know if he's going to want to sign for less than that or what's going on. So it'll be interesting, but all these people saying that Scherff doesn't want to be here, let him go. Yeah. I don't think that's true. I think Scherff wants to be here. He said it after the season that he loves Coach Rivera. He would stay here if he could. So I don't see that. I think Scherff is loyal.
Do you agree with Reed Hall that all these people are blowing out of proportion that Scherff does actually want to be here, and this is more just a negotiation tactic?
Yeah, I mean, he's been saying – I mean, obviously, a lot of players always say, I want to end my career here. I want to be here my whole career. But I just feel like Brandon Scherff is one of those guys that he was drafted here. He's grown here. He's become an all-pro here. I don't know his whole, family situation around here. But, yeah, I just feel like he's one of those guys that whenever he says, I want to end my career, I want to be here. He was saying that before –
2 years ago.
He was saying before Rivera even got hired that he wanted to end his career here. Before the whole contract, before the franchise got tagged on him last year, he was talking about he wanted to stay here long-term in his career here. So I definitely think people are blown out of proportion. And my whole take on the whole 18 mil thing is, yes, it is a lot. But I'm with y'all. I do think that it's just a placeholder for right now until they get the number down to maybe like 17 mil, somewhere around there, which I know $1 million less is not a lot like a difference, but it is what it is. But I just look at it as, is it worth it, 18 mil? In the long run, probably not. But if he was coming off the season that he had last year and the market was already set and he wasn't the one resetting it, my whole thing is, would you pay him coming off of our pro year? Most likely you would. So to him, by resetting the market, the NFL's next man up. So he's the next man up to get the money. So it is what it is. 18 mil, I think, is a placeholder. I think they'll bring it down to hopefully around 16.5, something like that, and they can get a long-term deal done.
Now, I think it'll be less than that. I think it's around 15, probably north of 14 plus that they're going to get, and they're probably backload it in some aspect to kind of ease this cap space this year. One thing, I've been following Scherff on Twitter, and the dude has been rocking the Washington Football Salute to Service sweatshirt literally all of his hunting photos, with his kids, with his buddies out duck hunting. He's wearing it. So, it's not like the dude is already ready to move on. He's still rocking the gear. And I think there is some little bit of subliminal message with that. You know what I mean? Now, what do you think this means, Rico, for guys like Darby, who we all kind of want Darby to return? But, you know, now it's kind of iffy with Adam Schefter reporting that Darby has gotten a lot of calls from around the league.
Exactly. So there's definitely a market for him. I think one thing that helps us is that there are other solid corners. I mean, you could argue that maybe even William Jackson is better than a Ronald Darby. Maybe by not a lot, but, you know, enough to where hopefully teams are throwing him all of the money and maybe we can scoop Darby. I mean, Darby's a homer. I mean, he has the DMV accent, grew up breaking in gold fan and everything. Like, hopefully that helps us keep him a little bit more. Because, I mean, you saw how homesick Kendall Fuller was when he left. Even though he got his ring, he came back as soon as he could for probably even less money than other teams were offering him. I'm hoping Ronald Darby gives us the same hometown discount. Not entirely sure, but if re-signing Brandon Scherff long-term and getting that 18 down to maybe 14, 15 helps, because that extra $3 mil could be the amount that Darby's okay, that extra $3 mil, I'll re-sign with that. And I don't think he should be asking for number one corner money, $15 mil a year, like James Bradberry just got.
Right. I'm 100% with you. In my personal opinion, I really like J.C. Horn out of South Carolina in this draft class. And the Washington football team continues to push out these mock drafts. And a lot of these reporters have come out and said J.C. Horn at 19 could be a very good possibility. And we've seen with Ron Rivera's teams in the past, they let Josh Norman walk. The very next year, they go and draft a corner in the first round. And J.C. Horn's a lockdown corner. So if Ronald Darby is really requesting that kind of money from the football team, I could very well see them moving on from him and drafting a high round pick for that corner position. What about you, Reed? Do you think that Darby is possibly on his way out?
I hope not. I like Darby. I kind of fell for Darby. It's not like I like lost it over him or anything, but I fell for him with his play. You know, yeah, I was getting into it with Eagles fans before the season, and they were just talking about how bad he was, how inconsistent he was, which he was when he was in Philly, and he was his second year in Buffalo, but he played fantastic.
All corners go to Philly and die. It's just,
Nnamdi Asamoah did, like, right. it happens. I love Darby. I do think that he wants to be here. I think he'll give his hometown discount. I think he understands that even though other teams might be better, this defense probably fits him the best with this defensive line. So I think he will definitely want to stay here. Of course, like, you want to see him stay here. I mean, the dude just led the NFL in pass breakups. Like, we like him. He's so naturally talented. He's a homegrown dude, like you said, Rico. I hope to God he stays. I hope we can figure something out with him.
Yeah, but in my opinion, like, I can understand from the football team's aspect of saying, look, we have a stellar defensive line that really makes it easy on the corners. So was it Darby really outplaying what he's done in the past, or was it the fact that the pass rush and the presence of Chase Young and Deron Payne and Jonathan Allen and Montez Sweat is what made him look a lot better, and that's why they can plug and play a very cheap option at corner. What about you, Hall? What do you think about that? Do you think Darby is going to stay? Who would you like to see replace him?
That's a good question. I like J.C. Horn. He's definitely a lockdown corner. He played in the SEC, was the one, like, standout on that horrible, terrible South Carolina team.
His dad is Joe Horn, by the way.
Yeah, exactly. He has NFL ties. He has that the whole, like, NFL legacy ties. So I definitely think that it would be a great pick. There's a couple other corners, maybe the second or third round you're going to take a look at. But I would definitely try to re-sign Darby. I don't think he's going to be commanding, like, a lot of money like y'all were talking about. Hopefully, like you said, he's from Maryland. Give him the hometown discount.
Merlin, exactly.
Yeah, he went on Grant and Danny earlier, right in the right after the season was over, and talked about how much he respected Coach Rivera, how much he liked playing for him, and if it was up to him and his agent, he would definitely come back and play here again. Another guy I think might want to end his career here, and maybe with the cap shrinking or the cap kind of in flux, I don't know what it is going to be. Maybe he takes another 1 year deal to stay here for another year and then try to get a bigger contract in 2022.
Yeah, the one benefit of Darby being so inconsistent is that might scare teams off a little bit because, like we said, his first season in Buffalo, he was so good as a rookie year. Then he kind of fell off, and then when he went to Philly, it was so up and down his play. And then last season, he had played fantastic. So I think that can really only benefit. Maybe that might scare some teams off a little bit.
You know, what about Rico? What do you think about possibly, you know, this has been rumored, but like Patrick Peterson or like Richard Sherman, possibly, if we can't re-sign Darby, signing one of those older vets that could come in and plug and play with that cover three, cover four scheme that Jack Del Rio likes to run?
Yes, Jack Del Rio loves cover three. And I mean, if I had my preference between the two, I feel like Patrick Peterson is probably better than Richard Sherman at this point, but I think Richard Sherman may go for way cheaper money. So if we're just trying to bring in a guy to just solidify a spot, a dependable guy, you know exactly what you're getting. Don't expect too much else from them. I'll probably have my pick with Richard Sherman. Also, I mean, just the leadership he would bring to the defensive back groups that, I mean, we have talent there, but we don't necessarily just have certified leaders in the defensive back group. Yeah, I mean, I guess if anything, Landon Collins, but he's basically almost about to lose his job to a seventh round pick that's going into his sophomore season. So it's just like, I mean, how much leadership can you really bring to the locker room when you're coming off the bench? Well, I don't think he'll be in the bench. I think it'll be more rotation. More of like an overhang guy. Now, I just can't see him starting at strong safety, though. But still, like, I would like a nice veteran presence for the DB group because we're solid around. We have Josh Allen and Chase Young as the leaders of the defensive line. It would be nice to bring in some type of, you know, somewhat of a lead with John Bostic and a combination of that with Thomas Davis were kind of the leaders for the linebacker group.
Right.
And Richard Sherman would bring like a nice little veteran leadership. You know what you're getting from them for the cornerback group, more than likely for cheap.
Yeah, and look, it's funny you say that because one of our fan questions was from Serge, the shooter, well, our favorite Washington photographer. He asked, what are our thoughts on keeping Landon Collins and Reuben Foster, and what do you think their roles will be? And I'll start that with you, Reed.
Are we keeping Reuben Foster? Last I heard, we're going to let him walk.
Well, that's his whole thought. Like, do we?
Right. Well, yeah, I mean, I'm pretty sure
because
that we are
letting
him walk.
Because his thought process is our linebacker unit is so weak right now.
Right.
Might as well take a flyer on him.
Right. Yeah, and I like Reuben Foster. I've been a fan of Reuben Foster forever. It's unfortunate the way that his career has kind of played out, but it is what it is. Jack Del Rio and Ron Rivera know linebackers better than anybody in the NFL. So if they don't see it in him or they don't think he can do it, then I trust them. You have to trust them. I mean, they're both former linebackers, played forever, very respected defensive guys. That sucks, but linebacker's a need regardless. You're going to have to, you're going to go into this season really with the only starter as Cole Holcomb, pretty much that you can see. I mean, Kevin Pierre-Louis, he played very well in some spurts, but is he really going to start for you? I don't know. So that's tough. Landon Collins too. I mean, like you said, Cameron Curl came in here and just pretty much took his strong safety job. Are they going to find another way to use him? I think that he's so versatile that you can, but he's demanding a lot of money. So I don't know. It's going to be interesting to see. I don't know what they're going to do.
Yeah. And I saw Ken Burgundy tweeted out that he would like to see Landon Collins restructure his contract to get to get that money down. I think he's 100% right about that. Otherwise, you're going to have to make a tough decision. And I know that we had Bug Rivera on, who's the defensive quality control coach for the Washington football team. And he talked about how initially Cameron Curl played the rhino position, which is that kind of in the box, slot kind of corner that played tight ends and running backs. And that's where I kind of see Landon Collins filling in, maybe in like a dime nickel package as the lone linebacker that can go out there and cover those types of guys. But it's the price tag, and then
that's a lot of money to play somebody like that.
And then with Reuben, so much time has passed, but I unfortunately had to say, like, the best part about Reuben was his Twitter page. Do you remember that one tweet he had about when he sharded or something? the dude is absolutely wild. But if Reuben does come back, I really hope that he is 100%. Because, like somebody like Kelvin Harmon has really been vocal and shown the public what he looks like coming back and working hard. We haven't seen a lick of Reuben Foster and what he's done. So I don't think Reuben Foster will be back. Well, with Landon, I would like to see him here because you can never have too much depth. The one of the worst things that could possibly happen is us walk away from Reuben and from Landon, and then something happens with Cam Curl, and now our safeties have been completely depleted and we don't have anybody there in the back end. So I would like to see Landon restructure and stay here. What about you, Hall?
Yeah, I'm with you. Let's be honest. He's not going to restructure his deal. But, he's not taking less money. But with him, with salary being so high, you kind of almost got to find a place for him on the field because you're not going to have someone with that much money.
That's what I'm saying. Only be on the field a few times. Right.
So I do agree with you where I think it'll be like a kind of a rotational thing with Collins and Curl kind of playing that rhino, strong safety position going back and forth. Mostly Landon Collins, hopefully in the rhino position more because Cam Curl can like play better coverage. But the whole Reuben Foster thing, like Reed said, Del Rio and Rivera played linebacker in the NFL. They're respected defensive guys. They're like one of the top defensive-minded guys in the league in the NFL. So I don't think they're going to bring back Reuben Foster unless he's 100%. If there's anything less than 100%, I think they're going to be like, you know what, we can't really risk them getting injured again or maybe – digressing and going back to the IR. So I just think that it's time to walk from Reuben. And as far as Landon Collins goes, like I said, the salary cap is – the salary that he's commanding is way too much to kind of let him ride the bench or
– like Alex Smith.
Even cut him. Yeah, even cut him. So I do think that they'll probably put him on the PUP to give him a little more time to come back from the Achilles. And maybe by, like, what is that, week 6 you can come back from the PUP. Maybe we'll see him insert into the lineup. Who knows?
Now, right. I could see them signing him for like the vet minimum, because then it's like low risk, high reward type of situation, Because Serge does bring up a good point of the linebacker unit being so depleted at this point that you do kind of need some cover guys. And Reuben has proven to really have some speed, but we don't know how he's going to look when he comes back.
It's such a Reuben Foster. It's such a shame the way that his career went. Like, he's so talented. He could do it all, dude. I remember him coming out of Alabama and it was just, he was a freak. Fell because of the character issues. Then he had the injury, then he had the issues with the girlfriend, and then he got released, and then he came here and he had another injury, and it was just it's such a shame, man, first day of camp.
Yeah, what brutal he could have been.
And imagine what that talented guy coming out of Alabama would bring to this defense right now.
Yeah, it would absolutely really help the team, and for a low cost at that. Now, over the past day, a lot of tags have come down with the NFL. So, Rico, I'm going to ask you, of all of the tags that has happened so far, which one do you think is the most depleting to the Washington football team and the fan base of who they wanted?
I mean, it really depends on, do you feel like we need free safety bad enough to where Justin Simmons hurts your heart? For me, overall, just even beyond the tags, Levante David signing for the 2 year is the one that hurt me. I mean, I literally facepalmed for like 10 seconds.
You're smelling what I'm smoking. I'm loving it.
Allen Robinson, to an extent, if you're looking for a receiver, but he's pretty expensive. I believe his tag is somewhere like costing 17.8 mil. And then you're going to have to trade for him now that he's been tagged if you want to get him. But there's rumors that they are planning on possibly tagging and trading him. And then that I think those are the two that really hurt the most. I mean, of course, Brandon Scherff, 18 mil, is the one that also hurt us a little bit.
Yeah, the one also because you took the two. I was gonna say Levante David by far, because one of the worst parts about that is that he signed like for like 2.5 mil, I think, and so like he took a really team friendly deal.
Damn,
and that kind of price tag for somebody, a captain that was perfect at that linebacker position for Tampa, that's just brutal to hear, because he could have really helped us out. I talked about early in the offseason that if you could get Levante David here in the building and then draft somebody like Zaven Collins or Nick Bolton, you're already set at that linebacker spot with Cole Holcomb, Levante David, and then Zaven Collins. So like that's brutal for the Washington football team. So now they're going to have to really scrounge around. But one, I'll say Marcus May out of the New York Jets, I thought that he could have really helped the Washington football team in the back end with that free safety spot. With all due respect to Jeremy Reeves, I love his story and the work that he's put in, but you can't go into the season with Jeremy Reeves as your starting free safety, in my personal opinion. You have to be able to upgrade that. And Marcus May was a huge depletion for the Washington football team. What about you, Reed? What's one player that got tagged? You're like, damn it.
I mean, we kind of touched on them, obviously, the wide receivers. Everybody was kind of upset about with Allen Robinson and Chris Godwin, but I kind of saw that coming. With the big three that was supposed to come out with Kenny Golladay as well, I knew all three of them weren't going to make it to the market. Right. Like, that's just not going to happen, unfortunately.
So but that being said, do you think that they should go after Kenny Golladay, because the Detroit did say that they aren't tagging him? He is going to hit free agency.
I love Kenny Golladay, but he's going to demand big money. He's a legitimate number one wide receiver. And as much as you want that and you want as much talent as you can have, I think that there's players out there that you can sign for less that would kind of accept their role as the number two to Terry, like a Corey Davis or Curtis Samuel, like we've talked about. Will Fuller scares me just because of his injury history. But I was really bummed about Marcus Williams, free safety from New Orleans. Mm-hmm. He's fantastic, dude. He's so underrated. Everybody always remembers him for that Minneapolis miracle play, but he's been so good over the last 3-4 years that it's really unfortunate that that's all he's remembered for, because he's been among the top safeties in the NFL. There's a lot of good players that got tagged.
Yeah, there were. And then one that wasn't was Hunter Henry and Jonnu Smith. Mm-hmm. Hunter Henry from the Chargers and Jonnu Smith from the Titans. Jonnu is somebody that Hull has talked about a whole lot for Washington to bring in as a number two tight end to be on the other side of Logan Thomas with a two tight end set. Do you think that that's still the case, Hull, or do you think that they should go after Kenny Golladay instead?
You got to at least make a push for Kenny Golladay, just because, I mean, that's the top guy on the market. You threw top money at Amari Cooper last year, and me personally, I would probably take Golladay over Amari Cooper. You at least got to try to sign Kenny Golladay. If they don't land him, it is what it is. Jonnu Smith is my number two target as far as offensive weapons go. I definitely think that his speed at tight end can match very well with Logan Thomas. He's a guy that can a possession guy, can work the middle of the field. He had a couple rushing touchdowns this year. He can do a little jet sweeps on the tight end, reverses and stuff like that. So kind of a versatile player, athletic tight end. Can pair well with Logan Thomas, who's an athletic tight end, can also block very well. So I definitely think that Jonnu Smith would be a great addition, but either one of the two I'm happy with. And if they get Curtis Samuel, I'll be happy with that too.
Yeah, so let me bounce it off you, Rico. Would you, let's just hypothetically say that you could either sign Kenny Galladay or you could go and get Curtis Samuel and Corey Davis. What of those scenarios, which one would you go after?
I'd probably go with the latter. Love Kenny Galladay, but just because of his injury history, I mean, Matthew Stafford's been out there basically just by himself almost because Kenny Galladay just, I mean, when he's out there, he's excellent. He's
fantastic,
great.
But, right?
I mean, but nobody's drafting Kenny Galladay in the first two rounds of the fantasy draft for a reason, just because you can't depend on him to be out there. Right. But that, I mean, he would be very electric in this offense, and Terry would just always be open because I think teams would worry about Kenny when healthy more than they would worry about Terry, honestly.
Yeah.
But I would take the second option because also, as far as receivers go, we have guys with potential that, like, we're not sure they're going to work out. Like, we have no idea Cam Sims, Kelvin Harmon, HG Isaiah, right, all the guys. But, like, tight end after Logan Thomas is just, I mean, who's going to possibly catch a pass? I mean, I love Thaddeus Moss, but he's undrafted, injured the whole first year. Oh,
so let me ask this question, because Tony Franchise asked this very question to us. Do you think Thad Moss has a future with the team, and or will they address tight end in free agency or the draft? And I'll start with you, Rico.
I definitely still feel like they will address free agency. I believe they met with tight end Tommy Tremble.
Yep, out of Notre Dame.
He's estimated to probably go maybe second through fourth round, anywhere in that range. And they met with him like multiple times. Like,
and Kenny Yeboah from Ole Miss as well, they met with.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. So, I mean, they're doing their due diligence with tight ends. I don't feel like it's going to be something – like, they're not going to go and get a Kyle Pitts in the first. But I feel like depending on how the board falls, they may get their guy somewhere between the third and, like, fifth or sixth round to, you know, groom and have him next to Logan Thomas. Especially since Jeremy Sprinkle, I mean, he's pretty good at blocking, but he is an unrestricted free agent. They're not tied to him to bring him back. They didn't draft him. So it may just be Logan Thomas and maybe Thaddeus Moss coming back before the draft. So I would like a Jonnu Smith. I feel like Hunter Henry on his best day is probably better than Jonnu Smith, but Jonnu Smith is way more dependable. Yeah, he may require less money. So that's why I definitely choose the option of Jonnu Smith and Curtis Samuel or Corey Davis over a Kenny Galladay, the, you know, same money.
Let me ask the same question to you, Reed. Do you think that Thad Moss does have a future, will be a big cog in the offense next season, or do you see the team really going after one of these tight ends in free agency of the draft?
They're definitely going to go after somebody in free agency of the draft. There's no question about that. Scott Turner said that his offense really works best with two tight ends. That's why they went after Austin Hooper so far last year. They kind of knew that they were going to be able to get Logan Thomas kind of under the radar. And yeah, Scott Turner said his offense works best with two tight ends. You can get somebody like Jonnu Smith who can really kind of be an extra wide receiver, even if you wanted him to. Like Hall said, he's so physical and so athletic. That would be huge. And then just having the big target in Logan Thomas. And Hunter Henry, as I love Hunter Henry, but as much as I love him, his injury history also, that concerns me as well. He's the dude is constantly injured. He's very talented, but always injured. And Kenny Galladay coming off his injury scares me. But the Thad Moss, I don't know, man, because he's undrafted. I mean, I know that last offseason was kind of weird with COVID just starting and the pre-draft process was a little bit different, but there's a reason he was undrafted. We don't know if it was strictly because of that injury or what, but his last name's Moss. He's going to get a chance. They're going to let him try for it, you know?
Yeah, Randy Moss's kid, dude. I mean, obviously he has a chance in the NFL regardless. But I think you're right on core with that. I think that he's a good depth guy in case you need him, but they are going to try to upgrade that position. And one thing about Tommy Tremble, he was not utilized at Notre Dame. It's so crazy. He only had like a handful of catches. And from what I saw, he's an all-around player. When the brief film that I was able to see of him, he's really athletic. And so maybe he is like a later-round guy that they could get, who they could plug in at number two and do well for you. Coming from Notre Dame that just produces tight ends out the wazoo, I think that is a really, really good option there. What about you, Hall? Anything to add?
No. I mean, you guys hit it on the head. I do think that if Thaddeus Moss is a part of the equation, he'll be a good like third tight end in the room. Occasional like red zone guy. He's actually a really, really, really good blocker. So
yeah,
I can definitely see him on like the red zone, or, like in short yardage stuff like that.
I can kind see him possibly playing an H-back type role, like an old Chris Cooley, right?
Kind of like a hybrid, like Jeremy Sprinkle type role or something like that, because he can catch passes out the backfield and at the tight end position, obviously. So I definitely think that if he's on the roster, it's a third wide receiver or a third tight end. something like that, maybe a fourth if they want to carry four. I do think, obviously, we got Logan Thomas. I do think they're going to draft somebody and maybe try to address the other tight end in free agency. So, yeah. And then, like I said, two's better than one. So, I mean, obviously, if you can get Curtis Samuels and Corey Davis or Curtis Samuels, Jonnu Smith or any type of that three-way combination, you're going to go with that, the two of the cheaper options over the big-name guy.
Yeah, absolutely. You're absolutely right about that. And one thing I will say, Kenny Yeboah, I've been talking about him for so long. He's the complete opposite of Jeremy Sprinkle. He can actually run away from DBs. I was really happy to see that they met with him at least once, because that kid can play. Now, Rico, I'm going to ask you, well, the biggest news that came about yesterday of all these tags was that Dak Prescott re-signed with the Cowboys. Do you think that this is a plus for the Washington football team? I know a lot of fans were clamoring, saying that bring Dak to D.C. He was going to test free agency. Personally, I did not think that was going to happen. Jerry Jones, as much as we want to make fun of him and everything that he does, he's not dumb. And he's not going to let a great player like Dak Prescott leave his building. What do you think about that signing?
So, yeah, I mean, I listen to podcasts pretty much all around the league. I don't really listen to Burgundy Gold podcast because I feel like I watch the games. I see everything on Twitter. So I mostly listen to like the Trevor Sikkema's on the Draft Networks and all of those different types of podcasts. So, and all of them unanimously have been like, the Cowboys are signing Dak. Like, don't even worry about it. So I've been on my YouTube channel. Like, I mean, I trust them. They're making it sound so like automatic, like there's not even a chance they won't. So I've just been preaching for months that they're gonna re-sign them at some point, and it's probably gonna be for a lot of money, which I'm happy about. I'm very happy. He's getting basically around 40, low 40s a year. They made sure that it's more backloaded so they can try to compete this year. I think he's only like a 20 something million dollar cap hit this year, so they're hoping that they can probably re-sign their guys, maybe go and get some guys of free agency to be competitive. But overall, as a Burgundy and Gold fan, I'm very happy that they signed him for that much money. He's a top 10 quarterback, but he's getting paid top two money.
I will say, dude, I'm just happy that that's done so we can stop talking about it as Washington fans. Everyone clamoring for Dak to come here. You know, it's another one.
Keith.
Another one bites the dust, so to speak. Now, what about you, Hall? What did you think about that? Did you think the Cowboys paid too much?
No, because it's just like the whole Brandon Scherff thing where obviously Dak didn't reset the market because ain't nobody ever going to jump
that.
In the near future.
And everyone is saying that, like, Jerry has the up on what the TV deal is going to be, which is going to be monumental. So it's going to be peanuts to what Kyler Murray is going to be making in a couple years and others Jackson, like that.
Josh Allen, guys like that. Yeah. Right. So, I mean, look, what else were they going to do? They had to re-sign Dak. There's no way that they were going to let him or franchise him and then let him walk in 2022.
Right.
And for all the Washington fans thinking that, like, I don't even know why I even thought we had a chance to get him this year. Like,
right.
That's just ridiculous to me. But so, yeah, I mean, look, obviously he's locked up for the next 4 years. He'll probably re-up again with Dallas, or he might move on at that point after these next 4 years. But I'm kind of with Rico where I kind of like the deal for them because he's commanding like, what, 15% of the cap right now?
Right.
There's never been a team in NFL history that when the quarterback commands 12, at least minimum 12% of the cap, never won a Super Bowl.
Nugget there, Hall.
Thank you. Never even sniffed a Super Bowl. Mm. So I love that move for them. They obviously have a lot of talent on offense. But
they can't keep it together with them.
If you can't stop a nosebleed on defense,
right?
I mean, what can you do? So I love the move for Dallas. They had to do it, and hopefully – Washington can find their franchise guy. God damn.
Yeah. The Dak, we didn't even entertain that option on this show. I feel like we never even talked about that coming here because we just, like, that wasn't going to happen. Like, I don't know. That just,
maybe it was like next year, 2022, we'd be able to talk about it. But like I said, I was just like the Nick Young, like, gif. Like, how
the one, the one time
we talked about him this year, like, that's literally impossible.
The one time we talked about it was with Logan Paulson, when that was when it was found out that Dak was following Washington football on Twitter and everybody lost their mind. Mm. And Logan was like, I wouldn't pay him that. He was like, he's good, but he's not the guy, and you're going to have to pay him so much money. And I agreed with him. Like you said, Rico, he's getting paid top two money. He's a top 10 quarterback, but that's the most you can say. You can't say he's even top five. I mean, but the market is what it is. But, yeah, good for Dallas.
I mean, and – We have to see if he's going to come back the same after his severe injury.
That was a serious injury.
And even before the injury, the only game they won was against the folding Falcons, which, you know, for me, that was perfect because I hate the Falcons more than I hate the Cowboys. So both of them looking bad. Yeah, both of them looking bad was just music to my ears. That was beautiful. Nobody came out of that game like, yay, we did it. So, but that was the only game they won before he got hurt. I mean, they were relatively competitive, but again, their defense couldn't stop anybody. Right. So it's just like, are they going to, after paying them all of that money, how much are they going to improve this offseason? I mean, they're going to have to really hit on their draft picks to really be relevant in the long term.
Yeah, and a lot of credit to Tay and Todd, their podcast, because they put out on Twitter last night, and it was perfect what they said. With paying Dak this much money, how are you going to fix the defense that was giving up 29.6 points per game? You know, that was a huge thorn in their backside, and that's what really was losing them games. Andy Dalton didn't play terribly, but they were – I know that he missed some games, and they had – I forget his name, but they
Benny
had –
Nucci.
Yeah, Benny Nucci in there from JMU, actually. James Madison, my brother, goes there. But, you know, that's a really good point said by him. I saw a meme earlier today that said, you know, Tom Brady has never been like a top 10 paid quarterback, and everyone around the league is saying, you know, what is he doing? What is he doing? Well, he's allowing his team to be able to use their money to bring in people to make the team overall better. None of these other quarterbacks are doing that. I think that is very telling, and there is some truth to that without a doubt.
That and when Giselle's making most of your money for your family, it doesn't even matter. Like, Brady doesn't care. Brady doesn't care. Yeah, he's good.
He's got the Uggs.
Partner. That's how confident he is. He doesn't care. Giselle. He's like, I'm married to Giselle, and she makes a lot more money than me. That's fine. I don't care. Yeah, I'll wear Uggs. I don't care. That's cool.
We have that more is money crazy than that the most accomplished football player in NFL history, his wife makes more money than he's wild even, when you think about it. That is.
Like, I mean, granted, she gets paid for supermodel and stuff and all that, whatever else that she does. But that's
like, you don't ever see her on TV or nothing. Like, how are you?
Not anymore. I mean, back in the day, you saw her everywhere.
I think it's based in like Europe is where she's getting a lot of her money, if I'm not mistaken.
Well, yeah, look at her. She just looks European as hell. I don't know what she is.
One thing I wanted to talk about, because over the weekend, this was huge news. And we had it in our group chat. We were going back and forth. Hall and I were going back and forth on Twitter talking about this. On Friday, the Junkies came out with a report that the Beth Wilkinson report on the Washington football team's investigation was done. They said they saw a page.
It was something
different than that. There was another language in there. They basically it said So they were shown what was the investigation, and it said that Beth Wilkinson was telling the NFL that Snyder should have to sell his ownership or he should be suspended. So Hall, let me ask you, what did you think about that? Do you think that, because I'm telling you right now, there has been nothing since. Nothing has come out since then. So what was your thoughts on that?
Well, like I said, just because the NFL came out and said that this is a false statement, we have not received any report from Beth Wilkinson and whatever else they were talking about. Okay, that's true. You haven't received it yet because she just finished it the night before. So, like, yeah. So, like, just because she had just finished it and the NFL hadn't received it yet, somewhere between that transaction – towards the NFL, obviously someone peeked little page like, hey Junkies, look at this guys. And it wasn't even all the Junkies, it's like it was Eric and Jason, who obviously, you know, they know a lot of people inside the building and around the facility.
It's called Diana Rossini.
I mean, look, they probably haven't said nothing about it since then, because Dan Snyder probably like hit him with some like cease and desist or like something crazy, but
he's known to do.
So all I'm gonna say is I do believe that the Junkies saw or were shown a page. And look, just because she recommended that he try to sell this share of the team, or and then she recommended a suspension. Come on, which one do you think it's going to be? It's going to be the suspension. Right. So I do believe that. And look, in all good time, it will come out that this is what was recommended by Beth Wilkinson. The Junkies will probably be right. And everyone will be like, damn, my bad.
Mm-hmm. What did you think about that, Rico? Do you think that this could very well end up getting Snyder to sell the team? Because, dude, a couple years ago, this is something that we even joked about in this podcast. We said that we were going to dress up Reed like a woman and try to get a sexual assault charge.
Yeah. That was when the Me Too movement first came out. I was like, I might as well just dress up like a woman and try to get Snyder out of here. Just hashtag Me Too. Yeah. Little did we know that would actually happen.
Right. Do you actually think that it's a very good possibility from this investigation that Snyder could be on the way out?
Very good. No, but it is like one of the first times that it feels possible.
He's feeling the heat now.
Yeah, like this is the first time it's really like a chink in the Dan Snyder armor. Yeah. I don't think it's like very likely, but this is like the first time that the floodgates are kind of open. There's a hole in the ship, and as far as it being true or not too, I just feel like the junkies wouldn't just go out there and put that out there and put their name on the line if they didn't have some form of merit to it. Like, there has to be at least to what some extent some truthfulness behind that. And I agree with Hall that, like, I mean, eventually, like later on down the line, we're gonna look back a year from now and it's gonna be like it was all true. The NFL just wanted to prolong the everything coming out until they can react, because they're so used to, they're tired of losing all of these legal and public battles. Like, they look just bad, and I'm pretty sure they're just trying to make sure they have everything 100% sure before they announce anything. Now, I think the NFL is just going to be far more cautious with everything they do, so they're just trying to act like this didn't happen till they get everything they want to know straight, and then they're going to move on from there. But I think it takes like a 2/3 owner's vote to vote them out or something like that. It takes 2/3 of them. And I'm not sure how much do they hate him? I mean, he makes a lot of money. He's one of the richer guys. Is there jealousy, or is it also on the other side? This guy contributes to our brand of the NFL being stronger and better because he brings in so much money. Even if they hate him, they may like him enough, like his money enough to keep him.
Yeah,
it also comes down to who do they like more, Dan Snyder or Jeff Bezos?
There's another aspect here of other owners having skeletons in the closet, and this being a slippery slope of them being forced out with just these types of things. And they don't want to be going down that kind of avenue of what could possibly unearth with them. One thing about the junkies is I follow the EB, I follow Cakes and them, and I love their show. I really do. One thing that EB has been complaining about for months is since the pandemic, not that many people have been driving into work. They have not been getting the views on radio like they used to. So in my personal opinion, this was them getting something, a little nugget, running to the radio with it because they thought this would get people listening on their radio show, get viewership back so you can get the ratings up. That's why I was originally like, look, calm down. This is not something you should be doing as a radio host, especially after many, many years. Everyone knows 106.7 and the Washington football team did not have a good relationship. And then all of a sudden, Jason Wright comes in. Let's say, all right, let's repair this relationship. Let's get interviews together. And then this happens. And so imagine being the Washington football team, like, we just rekindled this relationship. And this is what you're going to come out with? This is what you're going to do, is try to throw our organization under the bus. That's why, to me, it was a bad move on their part, because this is a sort of thing with legal matters and a lot of money involved. You do not want to get in between, because people's jobs could very well be on the line.
I will say also that, do you see that they fired two people like pretty much
the next day?
The next day, exactly. They were the holdovers, some of the last people holdover from the Bruce Allen regime. Right. So you don't think that EB and Jason probably have some type of connection and know those guys? It's not a coincidence that the story drops, and all of a sudden, the very next day, the guys that have been there for a very long time are shown the door.
Yep.
So
that's what I said. I was like, look, I was like, dude, this is not hard to trace the NFL. They'll find out who was able to see it. They'll find out how the junkies were able to hear about it. And Ron Rivera, I'll never forget when I went and looked at FedEx Field. My escort told me when Ron Rivera was anointed, when he was hired, he came to FedEx and at the podium was able to address all the stadium workers. He was late, and he came up to the podium and said, guys, I'm sorry for being late. We had some news get out, and we had to let some people go. And so that kind of tells you what Ron Rivera is bringing. Any types of leaks, they want them out of there. So that's why the next day on that Saturday, I was like, woo, they found who they were. They found the rats. That sucks to say, but it is what it is. That's their business now. Next thing I wanted to discuss, guys, is we have a new segment. We do this every year, Rico. I'm not sure. Do you do a lot with the draft?
Yes, I love the draft. That's okay. My favorite part. I'm a GM at heart.
It's my fault because I didn't update you. So what we do is like we do like an NFL draft prospect where we go over one prospect each that we have watched film on that we really like, and we talk about the good games and their aspects, good and bad. So we're going to start that, and so we'll have you go last. So that way you can kind of think of somebody that you've watched a lot.
Oh, I got
of.
A few. I Perfect. Got a few.
Perfect. All right, so few. Hall, I'm really excited to hear who you got. Who's your NFL draft prospect you're highlighting today?
Had to go with my guy, Nico Collins, out of Michigan. Woo. Wolverine. Opted out this year, didn't play in 2020. There was one of the guys, just like Rashawn Slater, who when they canceled the season, he was like, all right, well, I'm just going to get ready for the NFL draft. All of a sudden, 2 weeks later, well, hold on, we might actually have a season. So he decided, you know what, I'm going to keep training, preparing for the draft. Probably the best thing for him because Michigan was horrible this year, had horrible quarterback play this year. And throughout his whole career at Michigan, he's pretty much had horrible quarterback play, which kind of dipped his numbers down, just kind of like a Donovan Peoples-Jones, who I did another breakdown on last year. He was a sixth or seventh round pick by the Browns. OBJ goes down. Higgins goes down with the injuries off and off the field. All of a sudden, who steps in? My man Peoples-Jones was contributing at the end of the year. So I definitely think that Nico Collins is he's better than Peoples-Jones, in my opinion. This is one of those guys that, like, coming out of high school was just, like, a legit, like, NFL, like, wide receiver prodigy, kind of, like, body type-wise. The dude was 6'4", 202 pounds, and his senior year of high school. That's just, like, ridiculous at the wide receiver position. Right now, going into the NFL draft, he's 6'4", 215 pounds. He's a guy that came in as a true freshman in 2017 at Michigan. Only played maybe a couple games. Only had 3 catches for 27 yards. And kind of like attest to his like kind of like his mindset where guys like that would be like, I was a superstar in high school. I ain't getting no playing time. I only got 3 catches. I'm not going to transfer, man. I ain't got time for this. So for him to be like, you know what? I'm going to put the work in. I'm going to come back. I'm going to be that number one guy going into next season. He didn't really become the number one guy, but he definitely became a big play receiver. In 13 games, 2018, he had 11 starts. 38 catches, 632 yards, and 6 touchdowns. So he really became that big threat, a big play threat for them. I think he averaged like 16.7 yards a catch that year. And then to follow it up, 2019, he only played in 12 games. He had 37 catches around the same receptions, but increased his yardage to 729 yards and increased his touchdowns to 7. Increased his average. Bateman. Yeah. Increased his average per yard to 19.7, almost D-Jax level, like 20 yards per catch. There's a guy that runs a 4.55 40, so he has the speed to go with his size. Like I said, 2020 opted out. Some of his he became Michigan's offensive player of the year in 2019 as well. So that tells you how much you balled out as a wide receiver position. He's offensive player of the year for the team. Some of his kind of downside things is he doesn't really have a lot of separation downfield, but he kind of counters that and bounces it out
with his body.
Being a bigger guy, like you said, go up and can contest the 50-50 balls. Unfortunately, his hands aren't the best, but they're not the worst, if that makes sense. They're just pretty much average. And you would think a guy with, like, big hands, a big body guy, he'd be able to catch a little bit better. But I think that if he gets a little bit more consistency at catching and his route running, because he's a mediocre route runner as well, I think that his ceiling could be an Allen Robinson type player. I think that his floor is probably like a Dez Bryant type player, where he's not really fast off the line, but he can get the 50-50 balls. Yeah. He can be a deep play threat. He's a pretty good run blocker as well. So I definitely think that I think he's projected in the second to fourth round right now.
Second
to fourth round. So I definitely think that he can definitely be a contributor for any team that he gets on. And if Washington takes a flyer on him, I would definitely think that he can be a Cam Sims on steroids, if you want to call him that.
Yeah, I don't think he's going to make it to round two. I absolutely loved it, Nico Collins' film. My prospect, I'm going to make it quick for you guys, is Kellen Mond.
Not Jackson Carmen?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure. Yeah, everyone's already know about how much I love Jackson Carmen's film. I'm
pretty sure we all know about Mond now, too.
Yeah, but Mond is – I absolutely love his film. If you want to watch games of him that he really excels – from 2020. It's against Tennessee. It's against South Carolina. It's against Alabama. And then the Senior Bowl. The Senior Bowl did not start out well for Kellen, but then he finished it by looking great with some really good wide receivers. One of his biggest downfalls was his wide receiving core. He only had one draft-eligible wide receiver in his career there, and he opted out this year. A lot of his wide receivers drop a lot of things. One of the things that Kellen can work on is his release. It's very slow, and then it makes him almost inaccurate at times. But then he pulls off these very crazy acrobatic plays where he's throwing off one foot and able to put the ball on a dime on the sideline. He's got very quick hands. There's one throw in Alabama where two defenders are collapsing, and he's able to somehow fit the ball into the wide receiver in between them. You can't even see where that spot got through. It's amazing what he's able to do. Coming from a pro-style offense, playing in the SEC against really good defenses, I think Kellen Mond could really excel at the next level. I want Washington to really dive deep into Kellen Mond. I know I was wishing for him to be looked at in the second or third round, but I was hearing reports that Kyle Shanahan was texting Chris Sims telling him that he was looking at him for their pick in the first round. Which would blow my mind that there would be possibly six quarterbacks taken in the first round. But I really like Kellen Mond sitting at 6'3", 217 pounds. His completion percentage progressed every single year. From last year in 2019 was 61.6 to this year being 63.3, with only throwing 19 touchdowns and three interceptions with a quarterback rating of 146.9. I really, really like Kellen Mond. I think that he could have that kind of Russell Wilson, Dak Prescott kind of contribution to this football team in the second or third round, where if you're having a quarterback competition, I think he could excel and actually take it year one. So Kellen Mond for me. What about you, Reed?
I'm going to go with Amon-Ra St. Brown from USC. My draft man crush so far this year. I know, Kyle, shut up. Shut up.
I did not like his tape at all.
That's because you don't know what you're looking at, Kyle. Okay?
It's true. I don't like him.
It's true. That, remember, you had Jalen Reagor rated over.
No, I didn't.
Yes, you did. You had Jalen Reagor rated over Justin Jefferson last year. Do you remember that? Now. The Eagles did. That was a mistake. Amon-Ra St. Brown, his game is completely different. His game is completely different than his brother, Equanimeous St. Brown, who plays for the Green Bay Packers. Amon-Ra St. Brown, I don't know how you can't like his tape. He's 6'1", 194. He plays. I know he plays a lot in the slot. That's mainly where
wasn't
he's
his
been.
Dad like a universal bodybuilder? Like
both of their parents, or there's three brothers. Their parents are both like world class athletes or something. ESPN used to do specials on him or something. Their Sports Illustrated did a bunch of stuff on him. But he's 21. He's a junior. He was a junior. I'm sorry. He's somebody that really intrigues me because I think he has the potential to be able to be a number two receiver, and he could play on the outside. But right now, where he could help Washington, he's going to go in that second to third round. Is he could really be a slot guy, and he could do very well because he's an excellent route runner. He didn't have to run a lot of different routes. He didn't have to run a lot of different routes at USC just because of their offense. But the routes that he did have to run, he ran well, and well enough to the point that you could tell that he can run the other routes like this. And he maybe doesn't have the best hands, maybe kind of like a Nico Collins where they're good. I mean, they're passable, but he's very good at contested catches. He was a five-star recruit as well coming out. He's always been a big name. I know USC wide receivers scare some people, but to me, I'm scouting the player, not the helmet, you know? Yeah. I'm going to try to keep this quick with him. His downside, he's not the fastest. He's athletic. He is very athletic, but he's not the fastest. But he's not much of a blocker, but he tries. He's a go-getter. He's just got the ultimate football personality, almost kind of like Terry in a way.
Yeah.
Where he's a dog, but
a worker.
He's just not as fast or as good as Terry.
One thing I'll say is his quarterback did not help him at all.
Keaton Slovis? Yeah. I've never understood why people are so high on him. Some people think he's a first round pick next year. Mm. But St. Brown, to me, I could see him honestly, his ceiling, I could see him being like a Keenan Allen type player. Mm. His floor, I could see him being a Nelson Aguilar for the Eagles type player. So it's kind of so he's just somebody who I've always liked. I've followed him since he came out of high school, and I just think he's very interesting because he has the body type and the skill set to play outside. Didn't do it much in college, but I would like to see what he could do in the NFL out there.
Yeah, with that type of name, you know, his parents knew that he would. What his ceiling was.
Equanimeous St. Brown and Amon-Ra St. Brown. They're like, oh yeah. They knew what's up. These kids tight names.
Right. What about you, Rico? Who are you going to spotlight?
My guy has to be cornerback out of Syracuse, Ifeatu Melifonwu. I absolutely love his tape.
I loved his brother.
Oh,
that was a mistake by me. Yeah. Obi Melifonwu.
Yeah. I forgot about him.
I fell in love with his athletic traits. Yep.
He was a god in Madden.
Yep.
His problem was that he got drafted by the Raiders, right?
Yeah.
And they made a lot of mistakes the past few years. But I love his tape. And I mean, just like his brother. I mean, it's clearly in the genes. Freak athlete.
Yeah.
But the difference is you do see a lot of mental capabilities. My favorite thing about him is that if you look at his 2019 tape and his 2020 tape, there's tremendous improvement in several areas of his game. And after Cameron Curl, I mean, I've looked for that in prospects before, but like after Cameron Curl, now that's like one of my main priorities. How much better have you gotten from year to year? I mean, it's really important quarterback, but I mean, because even when Cameron Curl was drafted, we didn't know a lot about him, but like the one thing Ron Rivera kept saying in training camp, he never makes the same mistake again. Don't be surprised if he ends up being a really good player for us type of thing. So he's one of those guys that adapts and gets better and better every day. I feel like Ifeatu Melifonwu brings the same presence, but just freak athlete. Because Cameron Curl, literally his only downside is just his lack of athleticism. He's just not very fast. He's not the strongest guy. All of his things are IQ, technique, versatility. Ifeatu Melifonwu has the opportunity to grow into that, but day one, he's going to be one of the more athletic guys on the field. I'm pretty sure he's going to test very well at his pro day. First of all, his scheme fit with Jack Del Rio, he works best in zone coverage. And it's usually not the freak athletes that prefer zone coverage.
Right.
He can press man, and he has, you know, some film of that. But his best work is in zone coverage. And I feel like Jack Del Rio hopefully sees that and is like, oh, yeah, we can work with this. And then with him being such a freak athlete, he's versatile. You can sometimes, if you need him to play in the slot, you need him to play on the back end, they like to disguise their coverages. I feel like he would be a useful guy for that. Now, his negatives, of course, his tackling improved from 2019. And kind of his length, he's really long and athletic. Yeah. That kind of bails him out, but he's not a consistent tackler yet. 2020, he showed he was a more willing tackler, but that doesn't necessarily mean he was a good tackler yet.
Like D-Hall. That's something.
basically. But just longer. So, like, even though D-Hall would whiff on some, even though he was fast, but Ifeatu just has that extra couple of inches of length to, you know, can at least let him trip up guys.
Yeah, he can grab a shoelace or two.
Yeah, he should be able to at least hold on to a shadow or something.
Right.
also, he wasn't very productive. Last two seasons, he had 3 interceptions, you know, which isn't spectacular numbers for a corner. But, I mean, at the end of the day, when teams are avoiding throwing your way because you're the best corner on the team, how much, how well can you put up stats?
You got to look at Andre Sisco, too, who's on his team. Constantly the last 3 seasons led the nation in interceptions, so they just weren't throwing to Melifonwu. It really helped out Andre Sisco when he was healthy.
Right.
So that's one way to look at it.
Great point. Yeah, so that's my guy, freak athlete. We can groom him. Unlike Adonis Alexander, where we tried to groom that, I feel like Ifeatu Melifonwu would be the good version of that. And also brings that Cameron Curl gets better every day. Type of guy, work ethic, and I'm excited about it. I really hope we met with him. I think once.
Yeah.
I hope he killed the interview, and I hope Jack DeRio falls in love with him.
It's super interesting to me too because of how versatile he is. Like you could have him play safety if you want because he's that much of a physical freak. And yeah, like he just gets better. I loved watching him. He was so intriguing to me. But
I'm
his brother
you brought him up.
Me.
He's the one player I haven't really watched that much film on.
It's fun. You'll like it. You'll love his athleticism, dude. This guy, he's a dog too.
I just hope his brother is just like everything I did.
That's what I'm saying. I'm hoping it's a David Derek Carr situation where he's like, everything's all that happened to me. Do the opposite. Don't.
The complete opposite. When I ate Fruit Loops this morning, you eat Frosted Flakes.
Right.
You don't. Complete different on everything. Every step of the way.
Hey, Rico, I will say it's very impressive that you were able to rip off the stat with him only have 3 interceptions when we put you on the spot. That was that's some really good stuff. That's very
cool. Film is my specialty. That's my favorite. I'm a GM at heart. I love my burgundy and gold, but like I'm a GM. So, I mean, I follow guys from high school. Hopefully they recruit them at Georgia. But even if they don't, follow them from high school to college to NFL. And I keep track of my guys. I mean, I love DK Metcalf coming out of draft. I was one of the very few guys that was like, he's going to be great. I know he's a freak athlete. We're tired of seeing them not work out at the NFL level. But I keep track of my guys. Like, I'm going to keep track of J.C. Horn, even if he doesn't come here, because I loved watching him in the SEC at South Carolina.
He's so fun to watch.
Just attitude. I love my corners with attitude. That's probably one thing I probably have to take away from Melifon when I think about it. He doesn't have that J.C. Horn dominant attitude. And, like, I'm the alpha male out here. He doesn't. J.C. Horn has that.
And J.C. Horn just ran a 4.39 laser 40.
Damn,
the other day. Not my Eric Stokes.
Eric Stokes. Yeah, yeah. What was that?
Yeah, I was about to say. Jesus.
I didn't see that coming at all. That was.
I didn't either. He was a three star. When we recruited him.
Right.
I knew he was fast.
I didn't know he was that fast. But I didn't know he was Henry Ruggs style fast.
I was thinking 4.42 or something. I didn't think 4.28. I thought completely that.
That's going to help him a lot, though. Yeah, oh, yeah. He's already talented as hell.
He's a long strider, Well, obviously, those Georgia cornerbacks are really tall, fast, and physical corners. They're going to really transcend to the next level. All right, everybody. I think that's going to wrap us up for this show. Rico, thank you so much for joining us,
thank
sir.
Thank you.
I really appreciate you. I really enjoy your show. You do a great job. Very impressive, I will say, with your film breakdown. So we'll catch you guys back again on Thursday. And where could they find you, Rico?
Street Scores on YouTube, STREET space SCORES, and also Street Scores ATL as in Atlanta on Twitter. And thanks for having me. I mean, if y'all ever want me to come back, this has been great. So
for sure.
Just let me know and I'll join back. And I apologize. I guess the dog said time is up. So now they're barking.
We have that going down all the time, dude. Don't worry about that, Rico. And we definitely will be hitting you up again, especially with the draft coming up soon. We're going to really dive deep into the draft, and we'd love to have your expertise on it. All right, everybody. Sure. You can catch us again on Thursday. I'm Kyle.
I'm Hall.
I'm Reed. That's all I got. I'm not doing it anymore.
All right, everybody. We'll catch you guys on Thursday. Washington football. Whee! What's up, everyone? This is Kyle from the Burgundy Zone. We are releasing our own merch to support the show. If you want to rock the Burgundy Zone logo or you want to see Reed's face on your shirt, we got it. We're starting with t-shirts, hoodies, and zip-up. So if you're a fan of the show, make sure you snag one before they are gone. Check out the link in our bio on Instagram, or you can find the link in the description of the video. Thanks again for all your support. Until next time.